Views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Welcome, welcome. This is the Code Breakers. This is Paradox.
And this is D.
And we're coming to you again on, what's the day? Today is August 16th, 2016. We're going to have some discussions today around racism, white supremacy. Some of our topics of discussion will be, we're going to discuss a little bit of Trump and whiteness and its importance, probably touch on Milwaukee and Sheriff Clark, as well as a discussion on Pan-Africanism and some other topics as well that's going on, I guess you can call them what, current affairs or whatever you want to call them, or social media affairs. And I just wanted to say at the top of the show that you can definitely hit us on Twitter at CodeBreakers191. We're probably mostly active, probably there. Just want to put that out there.
Gentlemen, this is Scotty Engineer. Before we get started, I got disconnected from the conference line. I know people listen to the program that way, so allow me to just briefly interrupt and get reconnected back to that conference line. I apologize.
This service
is
provided in high definition by freeconferencecallhd.com.
This conference is being recorded. Q&A session started.
Okay, and we're good.
All right, appreciate it. Well, DC, these last couple weeks,
as always, been full of examples of racism and white supremacy. White people doing what they do, of course. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. They definitely don't take breaks, apparently. It's a real thing. It's real.
Well, you gotta keep busy if you want to control the planet based off a system that is based off an illusion like skin color. So you got to stay busy when you have something like that that's going to be the dominant factor as far as, you know, it's not a game, it's not a joke, but being that they use that as the model to dominate all people in all areas of people activity, of course, you know, they stay on their job. So, you know, we have to stay on ours and be able to deconstruct racism at its most potent parts, and be able to see if we can come up with ways to counteract the system of racism by counteraction. And hopefully this program can help you start to do things and act in a certain way, or to be able to think in a certain way to where you can begin to at least see the system for what it is. And then you can build up a code of your own on how you want to attack the actual system.
I'm still working on mine.
Oh well, hey, you know, we're all working on it. You know, this is not none of us have the answers, obviously. Yeah. So
it seems like it's so much information. It's like it's a lifetime just to learn,
right,
before you even start trying to put something into practice. Sometimes it seems like.
Indeed. No, I get it. So what you want to start with? Just let me know.
I mean, we can touch on different things. I mean, I want to keep it basically just kind of loose, because from the code book perspective, I think we're gonna probably touch on definitely politics, probably more than anything, off the top of my head. But I was reading the wasn't really reading, but I was kind of skimming through the day the Baltimore and the Justice Department report.
Uh huh.
And just the thing, you know, just looking at some of the stuff about just a lot of stuff about, I guess you can just say about the Constitution, the way they're kind of writing a lot of this stuff, but, and if using words like, you know, discrimination, enforcement, and the Constitution, but just talking about, you know, it's interesting because, you know, you put these reports together, and it's just strange in a lot of ways, because, you know, like, I'm looking at stuff like unconstitutional stops, searches, and arrests, unconstitutional arrest in these things called zero tolerance enforcement strategy zones or something, stopping searches unconstitutionally on pedestrians, unconstitutional arrests, discriminates against African Americans, what else, disproportionately impacting African Americans as far as their they're using the word enforcement activities. I mean, it's just, it seems endless. Like, I'm looking at just the table of content the table of content is so long of all the misconduct.
Mm-hmm.
Sexual assault. I mean, it's just.
Well, I'm
just trying to figure out when, you know.
Well, so let's first just kind of like give a reminder that we are actually in the DMV area. Me and Paradox are basically on the DC side of things, not in the Baltimore side of things. So people that are not that are not from around this way know that there is a distinct difference between the two. So just wanted to kind of make that clear. That we're from the 495 corridor beltway inside the PG to DC area. So, but yeah, I'd like to kind of give it a breakdown and kind of we can go over a little bit of some. What were some of the interesting things that you saw on the table of contents? We can even start from there and kind of just go through it real quick.
You broke up a little bit. What did you just say?
We can kind of go through the table of contents and kind of get a little breakdown about some of it and see what's going on from there.
Yeah, I just read off a few just now, but it's just a strange thing. Like, for example, one of the titles is the relationship between the police and the community in Baltimore is broken. That's an actual line on page 158.
Hold on now, this is the same department where they did not charge any of the officers, any of them, with any kind, they even threw out the last three cases.
Yeah.
For the Freddie Gray case during the trial. So read that one more time. I just want to make sure. This is the DOJ report, right? This is the
DOJ report.
This is right down the road. So this is hometown. This is not like a long way. So yeah, they didn't have to go that far.
That's true.
Read it one more time. Just make sure.
The report came out August the 10th, so it's been about 6 days.
2016. Okay, so we're current. Okay, good.
We're pretty current.
So what did they say again? I just want to make sure.
Let me read it this way. It starts out with Baltimore Police Department fails to engage in effective community policing. The relationship between the police and the community in Baltimore is broken, has failed to implement community policies and principles, etc. And then it says the department recognized that it must improve its relationship with the community it serves, but much work remains. Basically, what it says. It's just one line. It's just reading through. It just seems, you know, it'd be different if you was a new city, mm-hmm. just got built. No one lives there, right? You just got everyone. You know, you just hired a bunch of people to run a city. And right. then, you know, a year later, you say, oh, we need to improve things. But isn't Baltimore one of the original cities? Hasn't it been there for a while?
Been around for a while, yes, sir.
Lord Baltimore.
part of the original 13 colonies, Maryland is. So, yeah, that would be accurate, sir. One of the original 13 of these United States before Manifest Destiny took over and they decided to exterminate the rest of the original inhabitants on this landmass and sexed in, sexed out. And what we mean by that is that they started to promulgate their faulty recessive seeds. And we got a new word for white people. You know, this is not name calling. So hopefully, you know, people can let me know if it is name calling. But we kind of coined the term me and Paradox, and we thought it would be cool to just call them the recessives. So basically, the recessives. So these are the people that want to go by, want to classify themselves as white, and want to put themselves in a category of not being a person of so-called melanin content or color. So there you go, the recessives. So carry on. Hopefully it ain't name calling. I don't think nobody ever got, you know.
No, I think you are
punished before that. So man, the recessives should be something that they can understand because they want to keep themselves white. By the way, so the recessives.
One of the other complaints were, I mean, it's like I said, it's three pages of just breaking down what they're failing in, and it pretty much is everything. Even we know accountability and misconduct isn't there. They were even saying how they don't report a lot of stuff, so even it's hard to track a lot of things, because they were saying that they have some numbers, but they don't really, and I'm interpreting this, they don't really trust the numbers because they don't report a lot of stuff. So they're out here doing random things, and I've been looking at this report for a few days. I'm still having a hard time really processing all of it, because I mean, it's really a real thing. You know, these are people who supposed to be, you know,
okay, so
I guess protecting people, and then the people right. that are protecting people are acting as if everybody's lying and that they're right, not like being mistreated by cops. And then you read this report. So I walked around and was asking random people from the area, did you read the DOJ report? Because some of the people that I'm around are the people who act like everybody's crazy and saying, oh, what are you talking about? The cops are here to protect us.
Oh, boy.
Non-white people.
Yeah, all non-white people specifically. Are we talking about specifically black people, the most victimized of the groups?
No, non-white people.
The non-whites? Also, you was even getting with a lot of people that were...
because the thing is that the assumption you make generally, like I was telling you before, is that... My whole point is this: we've known that cops were crooked, right? It was just an inclination or something that you just kind of grew up in, and you kind of knew that, you know, cops did what they did, and you knew certain cops and they did what they did, but not I'm talking about myself, not understanding it systematically. And when people who had more interaction with the system would try to explain it to me, it still seemed not real. Even though I know I'm being mistreated, it still didn't seem like it's you know, these are widespread policies that are normal. Simultaneously, people, middle class, upper middle class, the television, romanticizing cops, etc., make it seem like the police departments were a safe place to be, and if you act right, then you'll be fine. And it's like, even the simplicity of words like acting right, etc., that's not reality for human beings in general, especially in this type of system. So you need the flexibility, because people in this environment, in a capitalist structure, scarcity structure, structure built off of mistreatment, you know what I mean? It's going to have a lot of people making a lot of mistakes and needing multiple chances and not just being locked up or getting put on papers or whatever. So that's all I'm saying. So knowing all of those things and then to have a system in place, because this report really is all the police departments in the country, in my opinion, because we had some other DOJ reports that came out of, was it Ferguson? And I think they had another one recently outside of that, and they was even saying how I think out of 20,000 citizens, if I'm not mistaken, 18,000 got some sort of charge or some sort of you know, something on their record that will allow the cops to harass them and obviously take advantage, exploit them, and so forth and so on. What I'm trying to figure out is that do people really think that the human beings deserve in general to be treated a certain way based off of economics, as far as your perception of the situation, based off of economics, should allow these events to take place, and then someone has the nerve, like I'll say it this way. So the report comes out 6 days ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if people took a few minutes to read the report, then you should be rioting. The riot should be going on now, because you have evidence that police department has failed.
That you're going to be mistreated.
Every area.
Right.
Meaning
you're
going to
be mistreated. Yeah.
Meaning you're going to be mistreated. And so because of that, the outrage, you would think, and I'm floating around trying to find information, because I know that the energy from riots is an event that takes place and it happens a certain type of way. I'm not an expert. I don't know how to study it. I don't understand it. I just know that something triggers an event, and then what we call a riot takes place, or people are expressing themselves. I'd rather say it that way. There's people expressing frustration, possibly. I don't know if any of it's staged, stuff getting burnt up. I don't know who's doing any of that stuff for real in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless of that, when reports like this come out, this should be enough to file lawsuits. You know what I mean? Multi-million-dollar, it should be enough to do a class action.
Mm.
Against the state of Maryland. So I'm surprised that this is not enough evidence to push it. Not saying there's not lawyers who are not thinking about doing it or haven't already filed paperwork. I haven't seen anything online yet. But right. This is really condemning, because from our perspective, we understand that we're in a system. The average Joe, the average person living their lives, trying to function, trying to support their family, etc., is being targeted and being mistreated, you know, not really understanding certain things. You know, how do you try to provide some sort of understanding for them? Because knowing that you're in the system, knowing that you're in an empire, as we always say, the conquering has already happened. This is now, we're just living in standard operating procedure. They have things in place, things are set up, they modify it as necessary, and then we pretty much live our lives based off of whatever's going on at the particular time, and call it whatever you want to call it. Names, we have names for every damn thing. So I really don't know what's required to have people really understand, or is it just that things are set up in a way not necessarily to be understood, but pressure to be applied for you to kind of get out of places, to run away from places, to leave or escape, and or be gentrified or be pushed out of places, you know, taxes, etc., eminent domain tends to be the outcome, right? So this report comes out. We know that they're already gentrifying that area, obviously. I mean, matter of fact, very close to where they had some of the fires, you still got white folks running and jogging and walking their dogs in, you know, one block away. So we already know things are always living, always moving, always breathing and happening. And so it's just interesting, that's all. That is a lot going on with that.
I think one of the things that we can do to kind of clear up some of the confusion is when we say in police officers, we think that there's some kind of integrity there that is automatic, you know, in our brain, it's etched. It's almost like trying to rid yourself of the white Jesus paradigm. I don't want to go there and disrespect anybody that's on that, but it's just trying to reassess your mind in the sense of saying, okay, we have evidence of all of this proof. Now, this is what they have gathered and been allowed to share to us. Now, we know the most common theme about this particular system is deception. That's a primary motive that's used by people to classify themselves as white. They call it espionage, they call it spying, they call it undercover, whatever you want to call it. So knowing that is still being part of this rhetoric here that is being, you know, propagated out here, you can imagine that it can be, what, 5, 10 times, 100 times worse than what they actually are allowing to be spewed out into the airwaves. I mean, you can imagine it just whatever they're telling you, just multiply it and just be like, this is happening all the time. People are being harassed on a regular basis. And see, what we see is the end result. We see the end result of a car chase, an end result of a stop, an end result of somebody doing something where they have elevated the interactions between the citizen that's supposed to be the actual employer of the said so-called peace officer. I use that word instead of police. If you want to call them police, you can call them that. But I would say peace officer because this is what they were supposed to be. And, you know, sometimes you got to make the distinction and say, well, these are actually slave catchers or race soldiers. Now, most of these particular people that are in these uniforms or in these departments are coming from a culture that is not supposed or built to protect and serve. They are here to accost, harass, maintain, control borders, protect property, keep rich people safe, keep white people safe, of course, and to keep, you know, undesirables in their place. You know, because you have in certain so-called locations around this particular nation, especially where in the larger cities or the larger places where there's a larger metropolitan population. You know, your New Yorks, your LAs, your Chicagos, your Houstons, your Dallas, your areas where there's a large concentration of people. When you have to control those numbers, of course you're going to have people that's going to be mistreated at the bottom, which is going to be people that are broke or poor or whatever you want to call it, or uneducated, whatever name you have for it. People tend to say inner city, but we know what that means. And most of the time, these people are not white. In other words, classified as black in these certain neighborhoods or these camps where they keep us trapped. And peace officers, these officers or race soldiers or slave catchers or however you want to coin them, are sent out to control that particular group of masses and to protect the ones that are, you know, the desirables, the ones that stay in protected communities and locations and locales where they're supposed to feel safe and not to be worried about, you know, the undesirables coming into their particular neighborhood, you know, starting to rob or do different things and, you know, make them feel like they're in danger.
But look, let me cut you off right quick. But you know what's crazy about it, though, when you're reading through this report? Mm-hmm. And I recommend people to go and just Google Baltimore DOJ police report. I'm gonna tell you what's funny about it. Not funny, but what's just messed up about it is that a lot of the stories that people that they investigated weren't doing anything. You know, like it's you know, if you're struggling or you're trying to hustle and you gotta do what you gotta do, then that's a situation that we can talk about. But when you are strip searching children, teenagers.
When coming from school.
Exactly. When you're strip searched out in broad daylight, when you're strip searching women in broad daylight, you know, illegally, as they say, unconstitutional, which to me sounds like a crime. I don't know. I don't know the law. But if you have stories and then they're corroborating the stories and you notice that the police department, whoever runs the department, sergeants, chiefs, captains, whatever they are, and you find out that your officers are strip searching people who has a broken headlight or strip searching people. I mean, it's not necessarily strange. It's just that having the documents and kind of reading through all of it is really overwhelming because nobody's going to jail. And I think that they, if I'm not mistaken, they did get rid of one police department in some state or county somewhere in this country. not that long ago, or they had to fire a bunch of people, or fire most of the police.
That was the police department that Darren Wilson, race soldier that killed Mike Brown, came from an actual defunct police department in suburban St. Louis, where they closed down that particular police department because of the violations that they had, and too many particular complaints about people being harassed. And then when they got investigated, there was a lot of foul play. So it was from the top down, so it was everybody. So instead of just basically firing everybody, they just said, well, we're just going to have to just close this police department, and then you guys can go everywhere else and terrorize other people. Maybe you'll be more spread out, not to have so many people to be,
that's what I mean. You have a bunch of, and I'm speaking within the system, but you have a bunch of failed systems in place, right? So you have these people taking over counties, taking over states, taking over municipalities, states are bankrupting, et cetera, and they're going through all these different processes while at the same time pretending that everything is okay. And you have, police departments, who are doing things that really they all should get locked up for. Like it should be cut and dry. So what is it actually telling us? What is it trying to express that we are in those most vulnerable environments, which is the people you protect the most? So the people who are the most vulnerable are the people who get protected the most, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're able to function in this psychopathic society, you're able to function in society, have quote unquote success, live well, be in environments where there's a check in place to deal with different things, be it banking or be it policing, etc., versus the people who that are in a position where they're the most vulnerable. And then what is the response to that group, right? So what are you actually telling me that I'm, what am I living in when you're expressing that? Because I always think that the people at all levels are expressing their environment. So it's not for anyone to judge anybody, right? It's not for someone to say, well, you're doing something wrong. The environment drives the behavior. And again, mm-hmm. that's my opinion about it. So if this is my options, and the answer isn't, in some cases, well, show me something different. The answer is, why does this environment even exist? Who created it? Why is it here? What is the purpose for? And it sometimes seems to me, especially in cities, I think it's easier to see a little bit in cities because they're moving people around all the time.
Well, let's do this. Let's make it real, real clear for people to kind of get an example here of what we're trying to say. A lot of times that when we see the so-called victim in these particular cases, when they get killed, it's like almost like a faceless person or a person that becomes popular because of said action, and that we become basically like the Monday morning quarterback, so to speak, about what this victim should have done, shouldn't have done. If they did this, or they did that, they did this, they did that, it would still be alive. Which we cannot guarantee, by the way. Let me repeat that. We cannot guarantee safety based off action. That when you deal with race soldiers, it depends on that particular officer or whoever that particular person is to react to you. And sometimes they can put you in a situation where it's beyond your control. You go left, you go right, you move here, go get your driver's license. I mean, we've seen too many examples. It's not even worth it. The evidence is irrefutable. So what ends up happening is you get victims, we get the judging, we get talking about what the shit they shouldn't have done, like we can guarantee that there's going to be life, there's going to be safety. But to get past that, these particular people that we're talking about have families, right? They have mothers, they have fathers if they wasn't adopted. They have grandparents if the grandparents are still living. Everybody that are connected to these victims are not what you would call so-called consider bad people, or so-called what we want to call thugs, hoodlums, hoes, thoughts, people that are just basically doing the incorrect thing. You didn't raise your kid the right way, da-da-da-da-da. What ends up happening is when they start to put a face on the victim's family, and you start to get to know where people are coming from, then you start to get the history on how things got the way that they were there, that you can see that there's a pattern, there's a history. There's most likely that uncle that is around them, or that father figure. If they don't have a father that's in place or around, most likely will probably be locked up or got in trouble or things of that nature. There is a reason why there's this pattern of behavior that we're seeing in the Chicago's, the St.
Let
Louis.
Let's go a little far out with that. Let me say two things. I'm gonna push it a little bit. But one thing I'm gonna say is that I think that people think that you need parents in the traditional sense, or you need a father, and that's a typical thing they're gonna push within the black community. It's propaganda at the end of the day. I don't really think you need those things, in my opinion. But I'm gonna sit that down for one quick second. I will say this as far as the people that we're talking about is that there's an ebb and flow to the streets, and things are already moving, and you're doing what you're doing, and you're in a particular environment, and it's going to be what it's going to be, and that's how it has been for at least 100 years, if not longer, right? So we know that pretty sure. Like it's a flow, and if you're born in certain environments, and there isn't anything, there isn't obviously jobs, it's all just the typical stuff, then you're going to have to take. At the end of the day, so the I always say things that people are doing, the majority of people are doing, is to function, is to live, and is to survive. The environment produces that behavior. So if there's nothing for people to do in this type of culture, they already know what you're going to do, right? So for example, if you're going to outsource all the jobs, if you're going to lock out black folks out of unions, then clearly we got to do what we got to do. And unfortunately, we're going to have to do those things in many cases to ourselves, because, it's eating or be eating at the end of the day. I mean, that's what the white supremacists, that's what white people have created. This is their system that they put in place. Just, I want to be very clear about that. Historically speaking, there is no system that I know of that is designed to extract, to murder, and to kill all things. I have to hammer that on every program. Is that this system is designed to literally, consume as much as possible. It's just a very important thing. Understanding that behavior, you're going to get a type of human that is going to do what it has to do to survive, period. I don't care what you're preaching. At the end of the day, you can try to docile people if you want to, but the bulk, especially men, especially boys, especially what's been put in us by the Creator. The thing is that we got to do what we got to do, and it's unfortunate because of the pain that it causes, but the environment produces this. And we know that because we have the evidence to show that when you have certain things in an environment, those behaviors become a lot smaller. But as far as the family dynamic, because of this system, I would say it this way. I've been in environments where you don't necessarily, you may need male role models. You may need men to follow and women to follow how to keep yourself clean, how to be respectable to our standards, to black people, to African people's standards, to black people's standards. Mm-hmm. Understanding how to interact with your grandmother and your grandfather, your great uncles and aunts, how to respect, how to be a hard worker, whatever you're doing. I think that it's very easy to run to you need certain dynamics because someone or some scientist or some psychologist or a group of them at some university tells you that you need a certain dynamic that'll produce this type of person. But and again, I'm not an expert at our ancient cultures. But when I think about something, I think from a community perspective, children can be raised in a community and be fine. I think that things are being done to people to create the reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? So yeah, don't worry about family structure. I'm not going to let you harp on because you're locking all of the black men up for petty crimes and mm-hmm. building cases on them. So let's not play the game where you know what you're doing to people. You know that the family, from the way you want it to be, I say it even this way.
Uh-huh.
as we have been assimilated into European society, we've been forced to function as they have structured things. And I'm not going to say it's unnatural or natural. I would maybe leave that for another time, I think, maybe. But by us having to follow a certain paradigm they put in place, and then not even knowing if that's a normal behavior for us, maybe we're more communal, maybe we have things structured in a way where, not saying we don't need a father or we don't need a mother, but that it's not this perfect science type of thing where one mother, one father, one child, or two and a half children and white picket fence. Like, you don't need these ideas to function a certain way, but this system almost demands that you do that. So what do you do if I develop a system knowing that you need a quote-unquote two-parent household, and I'm going to target the black man, and I'm going to maybe even do things to the black woman? It's just interesting that just the way your mind is shaped around what things should look like and whose ideas are those and why do things have to be that way. Now, I've been in environments where, like I said before, that we may not have had a father figure around, multiple father figures around. Then they sort of have the biologicals there. And in my opinion, I'm not an expert, and maybe you need the genetics and the connection from the father and the mother. There is something with that. Don't get me wrong about that. There is definitely something special with that. But to function, but to quote-unquote behave in a correct way, you really don't – that's not a – I don't think it's a necessity. I think more community is a necessity. Taking care of each other is more of a necessity to get the proper outcome, which is ultimately trying not to hurt one another, but in turn – support as a collective group of people. I just put it that way.
What I was trying to say was that there is a pathology that is developed in our neighborhoods. So, for example, if I'm speaking about Southeast, then this person is from Fairfax Village, and they've been there their whole life, and they want to go up on Alabama Avenue and hang out at the Subway or the 7-Eleven. People from D.C. know what I'm talking about. Or they hang around liquor stores around different people. This is just basically what they are. The environment is shaping people's attitudes. So, of course, when we deal with police that come around, it is a volatile type of situation. It is not something that is conducive to the community, so to speak. So when they come to say, hey, move off the block, move around, you need to move, where are you going, why are you not at school, what you're doing, let me search you, let me stop you, you know, stuff like that. And you're just like, you don't have a choice. You know, you don't know this person, you're not dealing with them on a regular basis. What I was trying to make a point of was that these people come from families. So they come from people that are close to them, that love them. Now, for whatever reason, you know, they do what they do. Like, you know, everybody is not always all bad. Even when you look at these kids that were still in these cars in Chicago. Now, I'm not going to incriminate myself, but the truth is, I've been in stolen cars before. You understand what I'm saying? So, you know, when kids do different things, this was an 18-year-old that was shot in Chicago, if I'm not mistaken.
It's really nothing.
Right, but what I mean is they're painting this picture, and we are painting this picture victims also, because we know people like this, and we start to go into this blame mode, like they do everything they do is bad. Like, this could be a kid that you know, you know what I'm saying? Because I know them, I see them, and they could be, you know, hey, what's going on? How you doing, Mr. So-and-so, Mr. DC? You know, the thing going good? You know, yeah, you know, I'm trying to get in school. I'm trying to do what I got to do. But when he get around his friends or his boys, then they do what they do. And it could just be one, hey, man, you know, let's just go ahead and just jump in and do this, you know. And it could be just that peer pressure thing. But these are not just at the core bad people that deserve to be exterminated, is what my point was. See, because when we try to separate ourselves from these children, which is our children, because we're part of what? The community, so to speak, right? We don't need to have this ritual. Corinne Gaines is one of our younger sisters. She is part of our community. Mm-hmm. We know sisters like that. You know what I mean? That are not all the way bad. You know, have it rough. You know, can go off. You know, but that's just her. That's just how it is. I mean, let's just be honest here. Mm-hmm. Now, how many we know that's like that? Now, me and you know each other. Now, how many we know that's like that? Oh, where yeah. We just around them all the time. Yeah. I can name 10 Corinne yeah. Gaines.
Yeah. Easily.
It just
very familiar.
Just kids, everything. Just, I mean, come on, man.
Hey, it is what it is.
Let's I mean, what are we talking about here? And then you want to talk about, well, she was doing this and this and that. Come on, man.
Well, controlling the narrative.
Come
at the
on
end
now.
Of the day, at the end of the day, the key thing is that we're in a system of racism. So the key here is that what non-whites have to understand is that when that machine turn on, right? And you start seeing them ovens heat up and them gas chambers heat up, right? When you start seeing them building more and more prisons, matter of fact, when you start to see more automation coming, more robots doing a lot of the menial jobs that a lot of us are doing, and there is no job, what are they going to do with the people? What are these ultra wealthy, rich, white, powerful people going to do with everybody? Remember, we're talking about classifying yourself as white. Doesn't matter if you got money, you're not white. The key here is maintaining whiteness and practicing racism. That's the key. It comes in many forms. Just something we need to remember when it comes to trying to, you know, if you what we talked about before. Remember, as far as like you take these some of these celebrities and these other people, and it's like, well, y'all need to act right. What, for you to get better benefits? What are you thinking? I'm hurting you? Like, I'm impacting you? Are you serious?
Not in control. Like I don't understand. Like, if the system is based off a reaction towards people, based off the history in this particular country, white people are not confused about racism, and they play this game with us by making us feel like we can act a certain way to make this whole thing go away or make it better. That basically, what we're reading in the DOJ report is not accurate. See, because when you go back to that, then people have a different view of what the fact. Oh yeah, well that's true, but they're still good. They want to go back to these cliches and say, but there's good cops. How could you have good cops when there is a history and a actual department where this particular woman, the non-white person, I don't know, I don't want to do no name calling, but I think she was from what is now called the Middle East. When she read the actual you know, findings of the actual DOJ report for the city of Baltimore, she stood up there with the I guess the mayor that is now, I think she's going to be the former mayor once they pass the power on to the new mayor. Mm-hmm. And the police chief, racist suspect up there, and she read off verbatim that there is a history and a systemic systemic problem with profiling, racial obstruction, breaking breaking all kinds of constitutional laws. Who's going to arrest these people? Okay, so now we see, this is why we get into this whole thing about
racist.
We got
can you lock up cops? No.
Race soldiers. so we got a situation where it's probably, I don't know what the percentages are, but the people with the most power obviously in these departments are race soldiers. Because you can't have half and half. You can't have most good cops and this is continually go on this systemically. That's not logical. That's not even an equation. That's not even a balanced. You should have more people coming out on a regular basis. Hey, look, you know, I was there. They put them drugs. That ain't what happened.
Now, remember, that's not what happened. You have black people who are running these police departments in Baltimore specifically, right? DAs is black, so you dealing with. I think that also confuses us because, you know, generally we're getting kind of a one message. And so, you know, for me, you see the black face and you almost get a little comfortable. you know, I can't speak for everybody, but I started to see that them black face. I'm like, well, maybe, you know, maybe we can, you know, maybe something to work itself out. And again, you're getting the black faces, but once you go up to those police departments, once you go up to those courts and you start, if you really pay attention and you really start looking around, I just wonder, what are all the other hands involved? What I mean by that is that when the governor calls from the governor's mansion, right, what does that look like? The other counties around, who do they look like? What are those people? How do they interact with each other when they have different events and they communicate? And how much pressure is being applied to black people in those roles? Because I think they even put a, didn't they put a black commissioner in charge of Chicago?
Yeah, they did.
Didn't they swap the guy, the white guy out or something like that?
He got swapped out and they put someone that's been on the force for like 20 plus years. But
didn't
we got to understand.
Better? You ain't feel better? Oh, they got a black guy now.
That part of my confusion is I'm glad that that's alleviated, that we can have basically, I know now that we can have a lot of so-called people that are classified as black that are in charge that would still act as proxy. I think Mr. Reed has coined the phrase proxy racist. So they would still do the same function as a racist white supremacist. Mr. Reed, if you want to kind of give a breakdown, because I don't want to like give a definition while we have you online, and kind of give a definition of what a proxy racist is when it's a black person that is acting in a more inefficient way. If you wanted to chime in, if you can, or if you don't, then just let me know. He's probably stepped away, but yeah, so I know that he speaks on people that are, you know, so-called black people, and I don't want to speak about a victim in particular because he's been talked about enough. I'm trying not to bring him up on this program, but we can just keep it to Baltimore. Baltimore has a history.
He's in the title of the program.
I don't want to talk about him because I mean, I got my venom saved for one racist in particular that
I don't really think we don't have to have that particular conversation about it because it's multifaceted. So the thing is that looking at Sheriff Clark, looking at Milwaukee, looking at what just happened, I think over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're still talking about very similar patterns happening across the country. Now, again, this is what the media's covering. So the media is obviously driving a lot of the conversations on social media and vice versa. They're interacting with each other. Clearly, we're having riots. We're having so-called riots. We're having obviously police brutality. Really, to me, everywhere there's black people. We're being harassed, all 50 states and then really worldwide. So it's a constant harassment day in and day out for many of us. Some of us, it may not be as frequent, but all of us obviously are experiencing it. And so, and that's why I put the question in there, what does it mean to be black when we're talking about Sheriff Clark, you know, white wife, don't know. I'm assuming his parents are both black, don't know.
He's a Democrat, by the way, though. I wanted to put that out there. You thought he was a puppy. Oh, he registered Democrat. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Democratic.
Is the problem black people? Is the problem white people practicing racism that impacts the behavior of black people? And like just those dynamics about, well, being classified as black, being called an African American or an American, then maybe identifying maybe as a Pan-Africanism or identifying as a Moor or identifying as Negro, whatever you want to call yourself. And then what does all of those different things mean within a system of racism, specifically in the United States of America, under this particular constitution in these 50 states, as far as you being protected from you know, a military perspective, you having a driver's license, a passport, paying taxes, participating, and then your ancestors, really your family, for the last five centuries building before it was a nation, and then building it as a nation, and then participating in all the wars and just everything, engineering, science, mathematics, entertainment, etc. So us having a full contribution for five centuries on this particular landmass, and it ain't going back, just so people understand what I'm talking about. Ain't nothing going back. We're not going back to the past. So that's done. Past is the past. So understanding what our place is, where we are right now, and what our future looks like, dealing with an empire, dealing with people who we have identified as white, who identified themselves as white, understanding what all of those different things mean. Not to go too far out there, but really, Sheriff Clark, what does it mean to be black? And is the problem white people practicing racism and the effects?
All right, so it looks like we got a couple of callers. Mr. Reed, if you want, you can go ahead and put them on through. You can take them right before the break anyway.
The caller's line is unmuted.
Greetings, 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 caller. Welcome to the Code Breakers.
I took the hand up now.
Say that again. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. How you doing, sir?
Hi. I think a lot of the times when black people get together and we talk about things, I think we tend to come off the topic. I think the main topic should be to replace racism with a true system of justice. Mm-hmm. And I think all other discussions are really not relevant, because we use so many terms and we don't really understand the terms, what they truly mean. Like, for example, police brutality. That word police brutality doesn't really make sense, because police are here to serve and protect. So what we have is people who are in uniform and who have a badge and who have a gun, who are walking around and bullying people and killing people. So they're not police. So the best way is not to use those words, because those words cause confusion. So I guess in a way I'm thinking, what I'm trying to say, we should focus on coming up with strategies on how to replace racism with justice.
And what would be one of your first strategies of doing that, sir? And we agree with that, by the way. We do agree with that. But just share your synopsis. And I think that we were very, very clear, especially from the very, very beginning, that these were not police officers. I think we were trying to alleviate confusion. So I don't know how long you've been listening, but we were trying to get, because we are now as our moniker go, we want to be able to decipher code and be able to produce justice. So yeah, great. So if you have a suggestion, please feel free to share.
Have you heard of that before?
Absolutely. Like I said, we are basically very familiar with Mr. Neely Fuller's work. We are familiar with Dr. Francis Kress Welsing's work. In fact, we are students of the Welsing's Institute. We went there on a regular basis here in DC. So yes, we are very familiar with Mr. Neely Fuller. Absolutely.
Well, sir, I think one of the biggest issues I think is to understand the power of words, and to understand that words are tools. So once we can commandeer the language that we speak, which is not our true language, which we lost a long time ago, but I don't want to get into that. But once we can commandeer the English language and to transform this language into a tool that can empower our minds and empower our minds and transform us into the people that we can be. According to Mr. Fuller, it's universal man and universal woman. He has said before that he doesn't really know what Universal Man and Universal Woman is supposed to be. But what he's trying to say, we have to try to create like a new people with a new mindset, not based in victimization, but based on growth and justice and with a purpose. Like we want, you know, we don't want to be focused on that, the fact that we're black. We want to focus on the fact of what we do and what we say, and to somehow combine what we do and what we say into a powerful way where we can transform ourselves and transform the world. Now, according to Mr. Fuller, Black people need to be united under a code, a universal code. Black people can't unite together because that doesn't work, as you've seen throughout history. You know, whenever we get together, we ended up start fighting each other and start arguing. So what Mr. Fall was trying to say is that we need to unite ourselves under a universal code. We need to be our own individual leaders. So, for example, like with me, I'm at home in Canada right now. I'm talking to you. I'm talking to you, right? For example, in my life, I can, okay, like within the 9 areas of the people of activity, just say with employment, I go to work and I try to be the best worker that I can be. I try to help people. That could be one way of fighting the system. Fighting the system within my own self by how I use my time and energy. And God, I hope I'm not going off topic, but I guess that what I was saying about using words as tools, I think once we can codify our language in a way that can help us, and then we can combine this with action, then we can transform ourselves and start being that universal man and being that universal woman.
All right. Well, we appreciate the information. We do have another caller. I will say one thing real quick before we go to the next caller, is that black people, as of today, or people who are classified as black, might have some confusion today, maybe for the last 100 or so years. But prior to that, for several thousand years, black people have worked together and basically gave civilization to the world. Just wanted to put that on the record. But we're going to go to our next caller. Next caller, 561.
Thank you for the call, sir. Thank you for the call. Next caller, you're on the Code Breakers. What say you? Hello, caller. 561.
Hello,
yep. Hello. Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you guys. How you guys doing tonight?
Hey, what's going on? How you doing, sir? How you doing?
I'm like Mr. Reed. I'm still here. I'm hanging.
Okay.
I'm doing as best as it can be expected.
Yeah, that's what we're doing. We're all trying to maintain in the system. You know, we just had a suggestion, and you know, I would like to tell the brother our name says it all, Code Breakers. So hopefully he keeps listening and can see that what he said we don't have any disagreements with. But you know,
I appreciate the call from Canada. I do too.
Yeah, please keep listening. Going to the archives and understand that we don't have any disagreements with what he just said.
Right.
Go ahead, 561. What do you say? Do you have any comments about the report from Baltimore or anything else that's going on out in today?
I mostly get all my news from actually Black Talk Radio from the network. I get pretty much all my news. I go to other sources that I find to find reference from, you know, what I hear here. I've unplugged, you know, I ain't watched TV. It's been about a year and a half now. I do a lot of reading. But as far as what's going on, I'm not too versed on. I know something happened in Milwaukee, and I've been listening to what Mr. Reed has been saying and other and callers. Mm-hmm. But I'm not specific on what's been going on. But I mean, it's my radar is just my antenna is just always saying these things aren't new to me, or they're not scintillating to me. They're not fascinating. It's not entertainment because it never stops. Only thing that's happening now is being featured. It's being featured in films, being featured on everyday TV and the media, news, all that. But I grew up in South Florida, you know what I mean? Everything that's the murders, the rapes, the beatings, all brutality, all that stuff. I've been watching all that stuff growing up. I've been watching the police down here do all that stuff and get away with it. So it's like, It's not that I'm turned off to it. It's not that I have been somewhat desensitized, but it's more like I know it happened. I don't know the specifics. I don't know the names, details, dates, but I know it's happening. So I was listening to you guys, and of course your title says it all, Code Breaker. You know, we're trying to. I suppose you guys, you know, coming up with the exact formula for breaking the code of white supremacy. And I don't know, I feel now more than ever that the formula is unplugging. And everybody can't do the same thing. But for me, I knew I had to unplug from everything. I knew that everything around me was within a system called racism, white supremacy. So therefore, I can only exist. I can only survive within this system. I can't thrive. You can't live if something is against you, constantly against you. No matter, even if you make headway, even if you make a little headway, you're still not going as far as you're supposed to because you're being blocked. You understand what I'm trying to say? So,
absolutely, absolutely.
As far as to me, the formula for code is unplug. And when I say unplug, I mean I quit my job. I actually foreseen it to get fired. I knew I was going to get fired because it was plantation setting, as with most jobs. Mm-hmm. And I was on the bottom rung, of course, entry level. And I just picking up on it, being codified, you know, seeing what they're doing past what they're saying, you know, the code that they're using, I'm breaking it as they're talking and seeing that. So I knew I had to unplug from that. I knew I had to unplug from going to the supermarket all the time, frequenting Dunkin' Donuts, things like that. I had to start growing my own stuff. Mm-hmm. It's just, I feel that within the system, that is the formula. But outside of that, if trying to do it within the system, I think we're only going to end up with more David Clark, Sheriff Clark, whatever his name is, Alan West, Herman Cain. I think we're going to always end up with these proxies because it's almost like they have a lack of understanding that you cannot be, you can't have it both ways. So they jump to the racist side, you know, with the rhetoric, you know, black people would just act right, you know, black on black violence, and
oh yeah,
what he was saying
that.
About you know, the psychological study about the scene in Django, speaking about right. Black people, you know, we're docile and all these type of things. My main thing was, you people can't even sit out in the sun, something that gives life, without protection. That lets me know. Everything else after that, you inferior. So it was easy for me to unplug on that. But, you know, trying to be coded in it, and like I said, trying to survive in it, you're always going to run into these David Claude. You're always going to run into these same guys because they want the butter biscuits, as Scotty would say. They want the they want to live within the system. They want to be, they fine, they comfortable. So I'm not really sure if it is, a way that we can, you know, withdraw out of this system other than complete bloodshed, just being honest. Nothing else, well,
that,
in my
that,
eyes.
That seems like to be the and I don't mean to interrupt, but that seems to be the current theme that when it comes down to it, that's what they would, that's the response that they have shown that they would give when people are acting in a specific way that when words are moved into a certain course of action as far as following a certain code, and then when it counters to whatever the system or the power structure is, which is racism and white supremacy, if enough people are doing that is not supporting the system, then violence is the next course of action. So thank you for the call. If you want to hang around, we're going to go into a break. So we're running a little bit late on the break, so we got an actual clip that we're going to play on the way back from the break, and I'm going to go off on my person of the week that will be removed from the racist white supremacist suspect list. And hopefully this would give some victims a little bit more clarity about white people that cause confusion. So I know that we should be going to break right around now. So, Mr. Reed, if you want, we can go ahead and hit it to the break. All right. This is the Code Breakers, and we'll see you back in just a few.
Q&A session is over. Q&A session started.
Listening to Code Breakers on Black Talk Radio Network, new black media for the new millennium.
All right, we are back. We are back on Black Talk Radio Network. This again is the Code Breakers.
And Mr. Reed, if you want, you can go ahead and cue up the actual clip.
Like, it literally went.
By the way, Dr. Wim, I'll eat you alive.
What did I say? Did I say I want him to come on here?
You know,
I absolutely want him
like
to come
one of
on here.
White people who like abuse.
I would love it. I would love it. I would love it. Listen, bring it on, baby. I asked you to bring him on here.
This is Dr. Umar. Listen.
You can get a car loan, but you can't get a business loan.
He's talking to black people.
Education is going to cost me $100,000. The car is going to be about $70,000. The house is going to be $250,000. Why do you approve that, but you don't approve the business loan, which is probably for half the amount? Because if I finance your empowerment, that disrupts my system of extermination and genocide. You cannot kill a people who you are financially empowering. So we are kept without access to wealth. That's why the hood is full of mom and pop stores. That's why the hood is full of struggling businesses, because America has a policy where you do not empower black people for their own benefit. Any other minority? Yes. Why? Because if they get out of hand, they can be sent home. The black man cannot be sent home. Slavery is older than America. America was born on July 4th, 1776. Slavery in the colonies began on August the 20th, 1619. You can get a student loan.
What do you think, Chris?
I disagree with it a lot, actually. I have a little bit of experience with that.
Can I just respond to one thing, and then because I want to show you. Okay, first of all, I really get upset at these types of people because they just take advantage of people that aren't intelligent, and they speak well, and they take advantage of fear, they take advantage of anger, right? There are black people that go through racism every single fucking day, and they feel angry about it, as they should, right? And they feel wronged by society, and they need a rationale for those feelings. And this guy comes in and he goes, oh, I got you. I'm going to make money off of your anger. I'm going to make money off of your fear, and I'm going to give you the perfect solution. I'm going to give you a nice big bad guy for you to believe in that's the cause of all your problems, and I'm going to tell you some real sexy shit, and I'm going to bring out the DSM-4 psychology Bible and tell you why it justifies all my bullshit bigoted ass opinions. So when it comes
to
this, when it comes to this loan shit right here, when it comes to this loan shit you're talking about here, how is it that you could get a loan for a house, but you can't get a loan for a small business? Well, guess what doesn't go down in value as much as a small business? A house. If you have a house and you can't pay the bills, the bank can then take that house and sell it to somebody else. Can they take, Nobody Beats the Wiz and sell Nobody Beats the Wiz when that's out of business? Can they
take the property?
Can they take, but you don't own the property when you have a small business. You own the business.
You technically don't own your house either.
Yes, you absolutely do own your house. Don't. You own your house, and if you don't pay the bills, the bank owns
it.
But what does the bank do with Nobody Beats the Wiz when they don't own the actual brick and mortar that they're on? They don't own the property. You understand the difference between business and property? Because if not, we can't have this discussion.
No, I don't, clearly.
Okay, so business, right, is Charlamagne the God Enterprises.
Oh, yeah, I know that. But
Are you sure?
But if you have, if you own a business, like as far as like leasing a building, renting a building, which most people, that's what most people get the loans for, to get the building. Most of the time. You need startup money.
That's not true. I grew up in a small business, and that's not true.
Well, that's most of the time when I'm trying to start up a business.
Startup money is more than the $2,000 a month that you have to spend in rent.
What do you think, Chris?
You're talking to someone who grew up in a small business.
I
understand these loans.
So my father had a small seafood market in Mount Scott, South Carolina.
Okay. So let's ask him about what the cost was.
I think he's right about systematic economic oppression, but I think he's using an incorrect example in my understanding, because my father's actually an attorney and he took a class about minority small business loans.
Mm-hmm.
And when he came out of that class, he told me, he's like, yo, you need to let all your friends who are minorities, women, know that there is actually money out there that the government has to give to people.
Oh, yeah, it's allocated. That's what they do with farmers, especially now with the black farmers.
They got to get. So to say that like they're trying not to give you that money is, I think, as I understand it, inaccurate, because the money's already allocated.
So,
and the loan's coming in at like 0.0001% interest. Like, it's essentially free money.
But is it banks or is it? Because usually it's small business.
Like,
banks
literally
that are
in the cab this morning, I took a cab this morning, and the guy who's African American who's in charge of small business loans in New York City, they have like those things running in the cab. They have offices. You can go. I knew a guy who worked in the office. You can go, and I can only talk about New York City, but like, there is a small business minority loan office in New York City where you can go and you can apply. And, you know, essentially, if you meet the criteria, Chris. Oh, yeah,
grants.
My wife's a grant writer. I know.
Free,
yeah.
So your wife's a grant. So yeah. Free money that is specific.
Grants are hard to get to,
doesn't matter. They exist. So there are free money that you can get specifically if you're black, or other people of color can also get them, but they're more for black people. Specifically, so this is free money. This is small business grants, which you don't have to pay back. This is
you
free.
You sound like Dr. Umar.
No, okay, I mean, you can't just walk.
You can say that. But that's the logic.
But the difference is I can Google these grants.
Why do you want people to believe you, but not Dr. Umar?
I can Google these grants. You can't Google the information to back up what Dr. Umar says.
I did Google information.
Bullshit,
I told you.
You did not. You already told me when I got on the phone with you, you said I disagree with that one thing about sending back the other minorities.
Yes, and I said when it came to the small business loans, yes, you can get grants, but I don't know about from the banks. You can, when you get small business loans, these aren't banks that are giving you small business loans.
That's true.
Companies. Look, you know how I know that? Because I have businesses.
But he's insinuating the money's not out there, and I really think the money, like WAX, should absolutely be able
and
to get.
And we have.
Like
Barack Obama allocated $1.2 billion to black
Obama,
farmers.
Oh, Barack Obama, that guy who hasn't done anything for black people, according to Dr. Umar Johnson? That Barack Obama?
Hey.
Oh, what about that $1.2 billion? Oh, I guess he just forgot about
black
that.
Farmers.
Or maybe it doesn't fit his fucking agenda, which is give you a justification, give you that heroin you need because you feel shitty. I'm going to give you a justification for your shitty feelings and profit off your
maybe
ass.
Maybe he just didn't know.
It's his job to know.
Not really.
That's his fucking job.
We don't know everything. So why don't you come in here with more facts then?
Because I ain't Dr. Andrew
Schultz.
You know
what I tell Schultz every day? Read. Because this motherfucker will get up here and do exactly what
now
Dr.
Just
Umar is doing.
Now you're just trying to discredit me and say, this is what you
I'm
do. You're trying to discredit me.
No,
it's a very clever strategic move.
No.
You're trying to discredit me from talking about this person that you and I have already had a conversation about. He said specifically in this thing, what's the difference between giving people of other minorities in America loans and giving black people loans? Is America doesn't want to profit the black man's rise in economic power. not profit. They won't want to support it. They will do it for people, other minorities, because they could send those other minorities back to their country. How?
Listen.
How could you do that?
I don't agree with that either.
You can't send a Chinese kid that was born here back to China.
I don't agree with that. But you know the reason.
It's not even about agree or not. It's wrong.
I think it's wrong. But you know the reason I didn't dispute that is because I didn't know. Simple as that.
How could you not know? This is Mr. Constitution.
It doesn't matter.
He doesn't know the fact that if you're born here, you can't get sent back to China.
Hey,
China's going to look at him and go, we don't want that American.
It's two things I want to make a point about. The difference between me and you is...
Why don't we talk about this issue? Because now we're talking about us. Let's talk about this issue.
The difference between me and you is I'm not afraid to say I don't know. And if I don't know, you know what I do? I shut the fuck up and listen.
Sure.
And then I go research so the next time I'm more prepared. That's number one. Number two, the reason I tell you it's okay to say, yo, you don't agree with Dr. Umar. But to say things like, he gets up and he just runs his mouth and he wants people to believe in him, that's what we all do.
Yeah, I didn't say any of those things.
That's what you just said.
No, I didn't. I said he preys off people's anger and he profits off that.
And you said you want people to believe in him. And you said
I never said I want people to believe him.
You said he wants people to believe in him.
Of course he wants them. So
wow.
Woo-wee. Mr. Andrew Schultz from The Guy Code, from The Brilliant Idiots that share a program with the one and only Charlemagne the God, the Confused Brethren that's going back and forth with the person that is no longer on the suspected list. In my humbled opinion, he has just basically... exposed himself as a full-blown racist. Now, why do I say that? There was a couple of key words that he phrases that he used in his whole soliloquy as far as breaking down his whole deal as far as like the reason why brother Dr. Umar Johnson was so incorrect about what he said about loans, and he took it to the hilt and basically tried to extrapolate basic information and try to make it seem like, you know, everything is fine. Black people do have an opportunity to get loans, but of course we're ignorant. So let's just break down the people that was sitting in the room. I think people are already familiar with Charlemagne the God. I'm not going to go too deep into his particular history, but I paid attention to what Andrew was saying about his family being a small business, that he basically he exuded his dominance over Charlemagne as far as knowing the difference between a small business loan and I forgot exactly what they was comparing, but he basically said, well, we can't continue this conversation not unless you know the difference between the two. That's not funny, he's just being racist. But also the man that's sitting, if you watch the video, there's a man sitting in the middle, very calm, very direct. He looks to be probably in his early 40s or late 30s, I would say, and he's eating, look like some pudding or yogurt, just like a, you know, classic racist white person. Didn't really say much, but what he did say was crucial. My father is a lawyer, okay? Checkmate. Took a class on minority loans. Now make sure that I'm correct. Now, did you hear that also, Paradox? Did you hear exactly what I was hearing when he said that his father took a class on minority loans or like loans? Okay. And his mother, if I'm not mistaken, is a grant writer?
Uh-huh.
White people, if you're going to listen to this program, my rant and my anger and my vitriol are not going to be towards victim and racism. I just happened to run into this particular clip. Somebody wanted to send it to me because they was being flippant about. No. In fact, no. You sent this to me as far as the clip about Andrew Schultz, but there was something else that somebody sent to me that was sort of similar, but they was trying to kind of prove another point. But this particular clip is very interesting because it breaks down the deception part of white people. White people talk about racism like they don't know. Now, this person is sitting in front of a victim of racism, white supremacy, and he said, if I'm not mistaken, this is the other white gentleman there. I don't know exactly what his name is, but I'm just going to say the the most likely the racist the more covert racist suspect white supremacist that was in the room, he stated that his father took a class and that his father told him, hey, you need to tell all the black people that you know that they could get these loans. Now, don't go into detail now, but saying that, hey, you need to go tell them. Now, I'm like, they got Charlemagne in front of them at all times. Now, I don't imagine that Charlemagne is so-called basically considered a friend. Now, Charlemagne is related to, you know, he know a lot of black people. Now, these are people that can supposedly are so-called Charlemagne's friends. They can help, especially this gentleman that got somebody to write grants, right? These are people with information, right? We're talking about people that know how the system works, right? Paradox, are you following me?
I am following you. Went to University of California, Santa Barbara, and everything.
Oh, you done looked the man up. Oh, okay. Which one is this? Is this the one that I took off the suspect? Oh, the racist. Yes. Andrew yeah. Schultz. Oh, how dare you, sir? How dare you? Mm-hmm. Dr. Umar Johnson don't need to waste his time with you.
I think he went to school for psychology.
Oh, my God. Can you repeat that?
Yeah, I think he went to school for psychology.
Ooh. Dr. Welsing, I miss you. Thank you for giving us a little bit of knowledge and imparting your wisdom upon us before you transitioned. Because I could just hear it now. You just don't understand racism, white supremacy. They are genetically designed. I mean, when it's a situation like this, where it's so obvious, where this person, he calls himself, what, Young Yeezy or young Lionel Heezy? Like, are we for real? Like, you know, and I know a lot of victims. We get into this mode where he's the cool white dude. We got to have one around. He tells the truth. He cool with me. And I could just hear Charlamagne now, hey, you know, he needs to speak freely because, you know, a lot of these people don't know that they got racist views. But this is your friend, Charlamagne. This is your people's. They got access to information that they're supposedly keeping away from you. This man is sharing information like it's the first time. Oh, yeah, you know, my dad is a lawyer, and he told me one time to share this with all the black people I know. Really? Really, man? Are you for real? It's just so much goodness in there that I would just suggest, if you want to know how racism works and you want to see white people be deceptive, please watch that in the context of white supremacy, that interview, because it gives you a lot of tidbits on how the back and forth goes when someone is basically feeling attacked, because he's just talking about personal feelings. He's talking about how he feel. He hardly debated the information. And I'm thinking that when he brought up the whole psychology point about the book, right? Now, we're talking about a psychology major, right? Is this correct?
Yes.
Now, what is Dr. Umar known for? What is he a doctor in?
Child psychology.
Yeah. Oh, this is just beautiful. This is just beautiful. So we got a victim of racism trying to speak truth to power, and then we have one Andrew Schultz from the Guy Code and the Brilliant Idiots that make his money off the culture of black people, by the way, of being a slacker, by being a lazy bum, by being intellectually lazy, and be name-calling black people, and probably, you know what, I'm about to name call. I'm not going to name call. I've been real good today. But if you cannot see the racism in that particular clip, just look at how he's speaking to Charlamagne about racism and white supremacy, and basically how he's basically exuding his opinion over him and trying to expose his so-called friend and his particular thought pattern about how he's being basically he's basically agreeing with Dr. Umar, and that makes him some kind of, you know, faulty way because he basically wants the best for his people. Now, this guy's not talking about black folks in particular. He's not talking about what's best for black people. And see, what Charlamagne should have said is, well, what do you suggest, sir? what is the information that you suggest for black people? You see what I'm saying? Because when it gets into this back and forth and this empty rhetoric where we go back and forth with white people, like they don't understand racism, because what we need to be doing is ask questions and then we need to listen to the answers. We don't need to be the experts in the situation because we are not the ones practicing racism.
And how many young black people you think watch that stuff?
Ooh, I say about probably 100,000. I would say they get a good audience of people that's between the ages, I would say, teenagers to all the way up to 35. I think that they get a good significant audience, especially Charlamagne. And I think Charlamagne has, if I'm not mistaken, his Twitter followers should be in the range of 1.5 million. So he reaches way more people than Andrew Schultz, by the way. Racist white supremacist Andrew Schultz is what I will call him from now on. He's off the suspected list. He has basically identified and supremed himself as a racist that causes mass confusion. So yeah, he said things before. I think he's made, you know, comments before about most white people are not racist, and he's gotten away with that. He's dealing with a very, very confused victim, because I think what ends up happening is that we talked about it already. Charlamagne is trying to have substance, trying to, you know, be around white people, but still kind of be in this situation where he's so-called down for the call, so to speak, where he can kind of bring black people knowledge of self and things of that nature. Oh, it seems to be that way. That he's trying real hard to kind of, you know, serve two masters, so to speak.
Well, exactly. Yeah, I think it's a small but mighty illustration.
Heroin. Hold on. Let me just say this. I wanted to get this out before I forget. He used heroin. Uh-huh. Now, who are the people that normally get associated with heroin? And we're talking about the Baltimore area. Uh-huh. Like, are you kidding me? Like, this man has the nerve to say that black people have been victimized to the point. I just want to get this out. Black people, it's so much stuff. Black people have been victimized to the point where we're so dumbfounded. All we want to do is we want to feel good. Mm-hmm. Now, he doesn't understand the context of what the hurt is. You see what I'm saying? And I kind of get what he's saying.
Who doesn't understand it?
Well, you know what? I'm wrong. See how you get caught up in trying to defend white people? Here I am, basically excoriating this racist, and then I defend him at the same time. Confusion. Thank you for keeping me straight. No, he's basically, when he talked about he want to give you heroin for your shitty feelings. These are not feelings, sir. These are facts. DOJ report, Ferguson. DOJ report, Baltimore. I mean, Milwaukee, Chicago, the black sites in Chicago, there's irrefutable evidence. And when Charlamagne, the first thing that he said to him was probably the most potent. It probably wouldn't hold much weight if white people didn't leave a record. Now, he just ignored that whole comment. Remember that at the very beginning of the whole thing? Mm-hmm. He just skipped over that. Like, it didn't mean nothing. Like, he didn't even hear that. He's just going to go into his whole spiel about Dr. Umar Johnson and the incorrectness of what he says. Go ahead. What was your comment? I'm sorry.
Well, one thing I would say, I don't want anybody to ever forget about the rural areas where black folks are and living in, I would consider still really segregation in a lot of these small towns out there. I just want to say it as well. I know we talk about the cities a lot, but the millions of blacks living in rural areas and, you know, being in some of those environments, it can be very painful as you get more clarity on the reality that you live in, unfortunately. But anyway, I mean, you said a mouthful when it comes to this dude. I didn't even know who he was until very recently. So, but I just know that, you know, when I heard some of it, I was like, you know what, this is the kind of person that gets propped up, that'll start to get more, mainstream attention. Of course, people who are in the underground, people who are disconnected from things won't care and won't know about him. But see, these are the people who impact a lot of people who have conversations in the mainstream world. You know, the average people will hear him and will share these videos and will continue to cause a lot of confusion. So it's something to watch. And I'm gonna tell you, I'm watching it, and I have my mind that's more aware of how racism works, and I also have my mind that is very American. And so listening to the guy talk and kind of switching back and forth in my mind, you know, on one hand it's like, well, does that make sense? And then on the other hand, it's like, this dude is a racist, you know, very vulgar, a lot of vulgar language as well, but very racist. It was reaching millions
of black kids, well, on a regular,
conditioning us, because you know what's funny about it. I always think about which obviously I don't know Farrakhan, but I always think about the Nation of Islam, and I just think about their code and how they function and how the energy is, because it's tolerance, you know, it's and also not having to adapt to a particular way of thinking, being disconnected. Not, you know, I'm not speaking for anybody, but just what I can just see is that if you're able to be in an environment where you can unplug, like our caller was saying, where you can kind of unplug, I can guarantee you, we spent 5-6 years, maybe 10 years, just not being fed this information. And then when you finally hear it again, it probably sounds insane. Like, it really would sound insane to you, almost as if it was your first introduction into dealing with these people on a day-to-day basis, from a media perspective, from an educational perspective, etc., and just to see how deep we're in, because we're constantly getting fed this data, you know, even in the womb. And so just having some, just, you know, as my mind, as I try to renew my mind, and I'm hearing this guy talk, it honestly, it was almost unbelievable hearing him say this on live, you know, on live stream, just because my mind was saying, I cannot believe everything that he's saying is racist. Like, it's clear. Like, it's no confusion here from a mind that's a little bit more clear. And I just thought that was just, for me, that's why I had shared it with you, because, and I'm listening to this dude, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And of course, unfortunately, the victim is not qualified and is not educated. And again, one thing I would say from a cold perspective is that he should let Dr. Umar speak for herself. So you don't necessarily, unless you're qualified, you really can't defend a person at his level and what he's trying to attempt to do, because the goal of white supremacy, the goal of white people, is to maintain their system. So if they see, and clearly it's automatic. You know, we've been getting poked and not to take that lightly, but really being terrorized not to be together, not to love, not to enjoy one's company, but instead don't trust, fear, etc. is the behavior you want to continue to drive amongst our people. And so, you know, this gives us a very short illustration of just how it happens at a social level. See, the reason why it's important to pay attention to some of this stuff, I believe, is social media and things like YouTube, etc., that is the new programming. You know, there's no confusion with that. As people age and get older, as these what they call millennials, as these young people come up, they're going to be the adults, and not in the, you know, some already are, but in the next 10, yeah, 15 years, they're going to be the adults. They're going to consume media this way. Mm-hmm. And so even though this is a person who's a comedian, who's a client, he's actually a comedian, but who is a person,
psychology major now.
Right, but it's a person that's in media. And remember, for the average person, I would always say that, you know, you get qualified. And so by him doing a program with this victim, by him doing different things, it starts to qualify him, right? So if you get approved, I would say, in our culture, by one of us, and again, I'm speaking loosely here, but I think about musicians, I just think about people in general, how, you know, you bring somebody around that's non-black, and you know, you tell everybody he's okay, he's cool, you know, he can be around us, whatever, and you kind of, and you know, in many cases it's accepted, obviously in others it's not, but in a lot of cases that is accepted. And so someone has allowed him to come in, and then he's taking advantage of the situation. He's showing his colors. Mm-hmm. He's showing what he is, who he is. And Charlamagne, unfortunately, doesn't have the I don't think he just has the knowledge base. Not saying I do, obviously, but doesn't have the knowledge base, I think, to really protect a Pan-Africanist. I mean, when we look at Dr. Umar, I don't know him. You know, we've met and we've talked or whatever, interacted a little bit, but I don't know the person. Like, he doesn't know me. I don't know him. You know, but I've been to some lectures. You know, obviously, we've watched tons of stuff of him, and regardless of who he is, and something that I have to learn about as far as loving myself, loving being black, trying to understand what that means, loving Africa, loving blacks all over the planet, you know, in the Caribbean, in South America, obviously in Canada, Central America, etc. Just trying to make a point that you have black people who, and as me and you talk about, we look at just in America, we look at coming out of 1865, understanding what we had access to, what books, what knowledge, as far as masses go, 4 or 5 million people, getting this, trying to figure things out, trying to get an understanding, and being fought tooth and nail all the way through, right? Learning things through blue eyes in a lot of cases, then trying to get back to, you know, or understand or try to contextualize our history
while we're being confused.
Trying to get us confused while we're fighting, some of us and others, obviously assimilating, but others trying to say, look, I know we've been assimilated, and I know that if we do things a certain way, we may get a little bit more fat back, as Dr. Welsing would say, but at the same time, understanding what it means to be an African, understanding what it means to deal with the Middle Passage, and just getting more knowledge, more understanding, and as you do that, the things that we're talking about, like Pan-Africanism, I believe, we can read a little bit about that, but just the manifestation of things. Like, you know, you have a group of people who get kidnapped, who get brought somewhere else, exploited for labor, and then have to assimilate into that society to function, and then get access to knowledge. The world globalized, the world matures, globalized. You get access to more information, and then you start to piece together your African history and get an understanding of how great you were, how great you are. And I think that maturation process will take hundreds of years, in my opinion. And we're seeing the beginnings of it. It's something we really should be marveling at. So instead of listening, you know, you got these white racists that's talking to us as if we're not doing something great. And I think people need to really get a grasp of what that means. You got people like Mr. Fuller and Dr. Welsing, et cetera, trying to get an understanding not only of being victimized and encapsulating that in their text, but also understanding yourself, understanding the power of blackness, of dark, of Africa, of bringing life to the world. The first people to think, the first people to invent, the first people to have an understanding of reality, of concepts, of beliefs, of the universe. I mean, the more I read, it's painful and it's impressive. You know, it's just it's hard at the same time, because you're still being assimilated. You're still having to deal with, okay. But anyway, I'll stop right there. I don't want to go too far out there on that.
So what I want to do, I want to give Scotty Reed a chance to respond to the clip. But I want to read the definition of Pan-Africanism really, really quick. And then after that, Mr. Reed, you can go ahead and respond. So Pan-Africanism is a worldwide intellectual movement that aims to encourage and strengthen bonds of solidarity between all people of African descent, based upon a common faith going back to the Atlantic slave trade. The movement extends beyond continental Africans, with the substantial support base amongst African diaspora in the Caribbean and the USA. It is based on the belief that unity is vital to economic, social, and political progress, and aims to unify and uplift people of African descent. The ideology asserts that the faith of all African peoples and countries are intertwined, and at its core, Pan-Africanism is a belief that African peoples, both on the continent and in the diaspora, share not merely a common history, but a common destiny. So that's just a quick definition. All right, Mr. Reed, go ahead, and you can go ahead and share your thoughts, sir. Thanks for being so patient with us.
Oh, you're welcome. I mean, this is your program. I'm just here to assist, so I appreciate you even asking me to share. Speaking on that clip, what is the white supremacist name that was doing the most talking? And
Andrew Schultz.
Andrew Schultz, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant Idiots. He got a program called The Brilliant Idiots.
Okay.
And the guy code, he's on MTV.
Was Charlemagne a guest on their program, or does Charlemagne work
with
them?
No. That is the program that he co-hosts with the supremacist.
White supremacist.
Okay. Andrew Schultz. That's supposed to be his homeboy. That's his friend.
Okay,
his buddy.
So what we got here is I'm gonna try to stay codified as best as possible. We're talking about areas of people activity. With these people, we're talking about entertainment. And they were discussing economics, and you probably could roll some other areas would apply to that, as law was mentioned as well. You could also say labor, but mostly education. This is an entertainment-based program. I thought it was important and very interesting how you pointed out how many people they're reaching in their ages, okay? And because, like Malcolm X has said, my favorite Pan-Africanist, media is the most powerful entity on the face of the planet. It can make the innocent look guilty and the guilty look innocent, and that's power. So Mr. Schultz was trying to make the white supremacist government or corporation known as USA Inc. look innocent, and that Mr. Umar Johnson is lying about all of this racism being practiced in the people activity area of economics, where they were talking about, you know, well, all black folks got to do is go down to the Small Business Administration and apply for a loan. So that's insinuating that they are not going down there and applying for some loans.
Right.
I do agree that when you're dealing with white supremacists and racist suspects, that you should be very well prepared, you should be very well versed, you should be very well read. Not just for that program, but just in general on all nine areas. I don't think that you can afford, I think white supremacists practice racism in all nine areas. Therefore, it is good to be knowledgeable about all nine areas. It's probably impossible to be experts in them all, but you should have some basic understanding of how racists operate in all nine areas. And so here in area number three, we had this white supremacist spreading all this information. It was basically victim blaming and saying, and so if Charlemagne had been read up on labor statistics, business, you know, statistics, he would have been able to counter with, well, black women are right now at this very moment noted as the fastest growing demographic of black business owners. Small
That's
business
great.
Owners are black women. So apparently a lot of black people are taking advantage of those loans. But let's not act like, which I felt like he was trying to make it seem like, oh, I just walk in there like, okay, I have a company. Or although it's a nonprofit, it's still a company. It's still a corporation, Black Talk Media Project. Like, I can just walk into the SBA and they just going to give me a loan off top. Like, they're not going to look at credit score, credit history,
right,
and all of that kind of stuff to see if I ever been in prison, if I pay my bill. You know, the same criteria that they use in every other loan. So he's oversimplifying the process and what it takes in order to obtain those loans, and it is not free money, and those grants aren't free because there are always strings attached to that. There are certain things that you have to do in order to qualify for the loan. You have to agree to do certain things, and you have to maintain those things. So this is again why I feel blessed that I no longer have to work with racist suspects and white supremacists, and that 8 years ago Through the grace of the Creator, I was able to liberate myself to where I don't have to go in and do a good job for white supremacists. Because for sure, Charlemagne to be doing a quote unquote good job, he has to be spreading confusion to black people. And Light was pointed out is that it appears that he's trying to sneak in some black consciousness into their programming, and then you got the the white supremacist who's giving him a lot of pushback. It's not so much of it being Dr. Umar, but what Dr. Umar said. So the best way to confront lies is with truth. And so in order to know truth, you got to study and uncover the facts. And the last thing that I'll say is I really picked up on the accusation of Dr. Umar Johnson is just an angry black man trying to spread his anger. And the insinuation is, and again, whenever a black man like myself, because I do have a commanding way of speaking when I'm speaking to people in person. I'm a kind of big guy. I'm like 6'2½", 230 pounds, so I got a heavy voice, you know. But when we speak with confidence, when we speak like we have done our research, like Dr. Umar has, and we speak with that confidence, and we speak with not necessarily a loud voice, but a confident voice, then that gets interpreted, oh, he's angry, he's the angry. But then, you know, that's also ridiculous or illogical, as if we're going to talk about all this injustice and racism being practiced and it's not supposed to anger us, you know. And so, you know, like Mr. Baldwin said, I'm speaking of the black writer from the 60s, James Baldwin, to be a Negro in America is to be in a constant state of anger. We have to manage our anger. That's why we suffer so much, you know, mentally, emotionally, under this system. Thank you for allowing me to share.
Wow, appreciate that.
Did you have any more comments on that, Paradox? Because I mean, I think the clip says it all. I don't really have to go in all that much, but I just wanted to kind of give an illustration for somebody that is he's pretty well known, and he causes a lot of confusion, because a lot of times, you know, we have can I be heard? I'm sorry.
Yes.
So a lot of times he does these kind of topics, and they speak about racism a lot, and it looks like he was trying to go in and expose his so-called friend and try to kind of get him to declare himself. Are you supporting this man, or are you just, you know, if you go further into the clip, and he's kind of trying to figure out, so what is it? Is white people the enemy to you? Do you believe what this man is saying? And so he calls a Charlemagne, which he's a victim in the situation. And if you ever want to see someone that is clearly not in a powerful position, but, you know, they want to remain in good standing with white people, Charlemagne is an example of that. The interview bears that out. The white person is speaking without fear, and it's clear that Charlemagne is being very, very careful with the words that he's using. And in fact, he's capitulating to a lot of the views. Oh, I don't agree with this, I don't agree with that, I don't agree with this, I don't agree with that, kind of trying to kind of get himself into a middle position to where he can still be good with their audience and with the general consensus. Because like I said, there is another man there, and I would imagine that he's probably the most powerful person there. Would you agree, Monkey? Because he's not talking a lot, but the things that he said, I think that either he's probably like their producer or somebody that may be over the program, that oversees their program, so to speak. Or he may have been just a guest.
Well, it's possible. He just he's not as hot headed as the other dude.
Right. But you know, it's just funny that this guy can make all this money off so called black dysfunction, or black people that he think that are just making things up about their victimization, and you have the nerve to call yourself Lionel Heezy? Like, what is that?
Well,
like,
what are you talking about? And I will say this as well, is that a part of the confusion is that since we're deeply integrated into the process, it's not as if we will because you know he can operate to some degree historically probably in a fringe sense when it comes to us, but as we have gotten more access to finances, more access I think to money, I think that he's allowed a little bit more free range to culturally appropriate. Because of that, he has a little bit more free. It's something going on, I think, within, I guess, Hollywood is the easiest way to say it, to where some of us might be a little closer to them. I don't know what's going on on the planet. I'll put it that way because I can't put my finger on it, but it seems like lately, 10, 15 years or so, is that certain white people have been given more access to be more like us culturally speaking, and I don't know if that's because of some of the music or
it's monetized
or right.
They can make money. Yeah.
So it seems like now we've been pulled closer to them, and vice versa. Some of them can not many apparently. I know it's not many, but of course because of concerts and these suburban neighborhoods, these white rich kids, you know, same old stuff, obviously, but that are pretending to try to be something. It's been around, but I guess we have more of it these days because of more media access and also more. It's more acceptable. It's more like you said. It's a money thing now. So now, it's obviously more mainstream, and so you start to see it integrated a little more. And even speech, you know, I've heard it in you know corporate offices, etc., where you're hearing some of the language even leak into those environments on a social level. So it has become a lot more integrated, specifically hip-hop, but it's become more integrated into the environment on a mainstream level, under 40 basically type thing, as far as you know every day.
Yeah, I just I know we didn't really get into Pan-Africanism and like we really wanted to, and
yeah,
you know also
back.
Wanted to kind of like do a little bit of the politics, but just going in on the back to the police report that basically gives evidence to a lot of the actual mistreatment in police in the so-called police departments in Baltimore and other areas. There is an article in the New York Times. It's a very, very good article that I read when it came out that was regarding the report. And it's in the New York Times, and it's called, let me just give it as a reference, In Baltimore Report, Justice Department Revives Doubts About Zero Tolerance Policing. So it's basically about the report and kind of gives a breakdown of some of the actual they basically have some of the outlines about some of the actual mistreatment and things of the nature. So they kind of gave an example that, you know, some of the things that people were accosted for was mm-hmm. walking too close to the sidewalk. Let me just see. They have like they go into basically the approach grew out of the war on drugs in the 90s, record levels of murders. Criminologists say as departments sought to renew vigor by patrol officers to prevent major crimes in practice. However, data from police departments around the country shows that officers using the zero tolerance strategy focused their arrests on African-American men in poor neighborhoods while ignoring the same offenses in wealthier white neighborhoods. Let me repeat that. This is for someone like an Andrew Schultz that spews their venom about most white people are not racist. The approach grew out of the war on drugs in the 1990s. The zero tolerance policing grew out of the war of the drugs in the 1990s, which we basically lived through, me and you, and the record levels of murders. Criminologists as departments sought to use renewed vigor by patrol officers to prevent major crimes in practice. However, data from the police departments around the country shows that officers using zero tolerance strategies focused their arrest on African-American men in poor neighborhoods while ignoring the same offenses and wealthier white neighborhoods. One study, for example, showed that from 2008 to 2011, New York police officers issued 8 citations for riding bicycles on sidewalks in Park Slope, a predominantly white Brooklyn neighborhood, but 2,050 in nearby Bedford-Stuyvesant, which is primarily African-American and Latino, which the word Latino can mean a lot of different things because there are some Latinos that look or that are classified as black. So don't get fooled by the African-American terms of Latino. That term, I don't really know what a Latino is. That don't really explain whether this is a person that's classified as white or is this a person classified as black. I would imagine that this person has a significant amount of melanin content, especially if they're from the islands of Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic, or the West Indies. Moving on. A whole generation of police officers that come up under this approach. Arrest, 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 said David A. Harris, a professor of an expert in police accountability at the University of Pittsburgh School of Law. He said the federal government denunciation might signify a kind of turning point in law enforcement. So this is just kind of like an example of some of the things that we can give reference to when people want to kind of go in to say, hey, you know, this doesn't exist. This is not the thing. There is hard evidence. I mean, it's really not anything to really argue. It's just basically you can just provide the information and just, you know, you can dispute the facts or you can kind of have your idea about how it got that way. But you can't dispute that there's actually a problem and that there's systemic racism in this particular country. So it is what it is. Now the thing is for victims to figure out how we're going to be able to combat it. And back to a little bit of what the caller was saying in Canada, and I hope he's still listening. We do understand the independent actions, and like we said earlier before we got into the meat of the program, and I want to finish up, we do know that most of the actions are not going to be combined or cohesive. Hopefully we can get to that point where we do get less confused and we can join together. But at this particular moment, we do understand that most people have to come to their own conclusions about the system and then work independently to combat the system by their actions. Paradox, do you have any final thoughts?
No, I think we covered covered a few things. I do want to make sure, I guess, in a couple of weeks. I know we air every first and third Tuesday from 9 to 11, and we probably will discuss, we might bring up some of the politics as far as Trump and them, as far as what's kind of going on right now, just kind of some things that it kind of shows us from a white power perspective, as far as what's going on with the poor whites, et cetera, in this country, and just trying to get some context around around whiteness, as far as who are these people, you know, economics, how everything kind of plays into why he's being supported, and just get, you know, it gives us a chance to really see some things that we probably wouldn't have seen maybe 20 years ago. And so getting a chance to see what environment we're really in my opinion, you know, the one thing that I'm always concerned about is that how safe is this environment? Is it safe? You know, why do we think things are safe? I'll put it that way. And also, yeah, we might get just a touch on Pan-Africanism and discuss some of the wars that happened in South Africa and in Angola back in the 70s and 80s and just some of the conflicts, I should say, and just understanding a little bit of that as well, as far as whites and how they interact with people on the continent.
Just really quick, could you just go through and just give them where we are, where they can find us, and where, you know, they can email us and push the podcast, and you know, we're all on the Black Talk Network, you know, every one first and third. You said first and third Tuesdays, right? Every month, right. So we're here 2 hours. 9 to 11. Okay, so you want to go ahead and push the Twitter feed? I know you remember him better than I do. My mind is kind of fried right now. That racist Andrew Schultz.
it's millions of them. So Code Breakers 191 on Twitter. Code_Breakers 1865 on Instagram. And you can always email us at CodeBreakers1999 at gmail.com, especially if you can recommend any books to us or send us any news clippings or sites. We'll definitely appreciate it.
So this has been the Code Breakers, and we'd like to thank you for, you know, joining us today. And hopefully, you know, you can basically do certain things to combat the system. And I'm D.
This is Paradox.
And until next time, peace.
My ego growls, shorty gripping both hands, letting off my ego low. Bust it back and forth, there's no remorse. I win, of course, I'm in you fraudulent. I'm selling drugs, where's the love?
Hit my plug.
This is for the 40 buses, holding crutches, cause they know they hustlers. While the man is trying to cobra clutches, I drank a whole 8 bottles, man. I won't discuss this, cause even if it's champagne, better know your substance. Fancy niggas stuck on the brand name, but any day it's OE over champagne. I'm talking shit for my fans' sake. I give a fuck who can't relate. I'm every landscape.